Welcome back to episode 13 of Practical Defense, Home Security, Part 3. Welcome back to another episode of Practical Defense. I'm your host, Alex Haddocks. We're getting close to finishing the series on home security. You know, the past two episodes were focused on external measures to harden your home to invasion and robbery. And this week, we're going to look at things inside the home and various security protocols. You might have noticed an additional download in the podcast feed last week. All I did is I threw up a video clip of some training I did with Jim Wagner back in July of 2007. And some people have inquired about the poor quality. Just wanted to say that the video was made ad hoc, meaning we didn't plan it, and it was made with a cell phone. In fact, Ken used his LG cell phone that he brought with him from Hong Kong to record the training on a kind of a spur-of-the-moment decision thing. I didn't realize what was happening. I just looked over and was like, oh, he's recording this. So, in fact, it's kind of interesting. The model of a cell phone isn't even available here in the United States, but it was a really cool, very good thing. Most of the video clips I see with cell phones only last like 30 seconds, but his went on for a long time. And the video that came out of it was almost 10 megs, and that's quite a bit for a cell phone to hold. So it was a pretty impressive device. But the clip, it can be summed up just with a few words. Me in a lot of pain. Now, what the video is of Jim spraying me in the face with pepper spray. Twice. The first spray actually hurt the most as it glopped out in a really oily concentration directly into my left eye. So I got this, instead of being an aerosol spray, I got this glob of oily pepper in my left eye. The second spray, which had a good aerosol burst with a new can, because the old one was kind of an old can, for some reason wasn't as bad. And by not as bad, you can consider the difference between the bad I'm talking about, like the pain caused from being burned by fire and the pain caused by being burned with acid. You know, the pain difference is subtle, but they are both intense and all-consuming. And there are several points of this training exercise. And one is that you can learn that you can work through pain to defend yourself, and that's very important. Another is that you get to experience a chemical weapon attack so that if you come across it again, it's not as shocking or debilitating. And the last is that you learn how you're going to react when you get hit with some attack like that in a controlled, safe environment. And then if you don't react the way that you like, you can adjust your reactions and, you know, kind of attune yourself to it and make adjustments that you need so that you can react better. Now, the pepper spray exercise, it's something that Jim only does with his certified instructors. This is not part of the general curriculum for reality-based classes, and I do not do this to my students. It can be dangerous, so please do not do it on your own. And there are three different reactions that you can have to pepper spray, and this I wasn't aware of before the training. You can have complete debilitation, you can have enragement, or you can have little reaction. Now, during the training with Jim, we saw all three reactions on the people that were there. You know, one person, when they got hit with a pepper spray in their face, just bang, they hit their knees when they got sprayed and they were completely unable to move, unable to react at all. They were just out. Another person completed the drill on pure adrenaline and anger. I mean, he got so pissed off that he became a berserker, and that was how he got through it. And the third reaction, which is mine, was considered mild. I was still able to track the moving target. I had no problem breathing and was otherwise fine, except for the fact that I was completely unable to see. My eyes were not opening, and I was in a lot of pain. But the pain wasn't enough to completely incapacitate me. So this is a good lesson to those that carry pepper spray for self-defense. It's not a perfect weapon. You're not going to find a perfect weapon. They don't exist. And pepper spray will not incapacitate everyone. In fact, Jim mentioned that gang members sometimes train with pepper spray to build up a resistance to it, which it can do, apparently. And many of the police departments are petitioning to have a special police-only pepper spray with a higher concentration of pepper in it for this very fact. And, you know, I think that mild reaction is partially due to the herbals I take as part of my diet, because they contain some high concentrations of cayenne pepper in them, and it's good for the circulation. So again, please, please, do not do this on your own. Spraying yourself with pepper spray is unnecessary and really pretty dangerous. If you want to experience it, seek out a certified professional instructor under controlled conditions where there is medical and everything else available to you in case something goes wrong, because you can have an allergic reaction to the stuff and it can shut down your breathing airway. You do not want to put yourself into that situation. In the future, I might post other video clips in between the normal audio segments as kind of like bonus content. And don't expect them on any sort of regular schedule. I'll just toss them up when I have them or when they become available, you know, meaning when I finally get around to putting them together. All right, let's move on to our main topic of security measures for inside the home. Let's start with the obvious one, alarm systems. Off the top, alarm systems are great. They secure the perimeter of their home as much as you allow for it or pay for it. And there are a number of sensors and sensor arrays that can be installed in your home from a bunch of different companies. You know, there are sound sensors that listen for breaking glass or doors kicked in. They have door and window sensors that, you know, if the doors open or move, it sets off stuff. They have motion detectors. They have integrated smoke detectors and gas detectors and all sorts of really great stuff. The list is huge, and it can be installed in any number of combinations. There are also a number of settings. Now, for example, there's a home setting where, for example, you're home for the day. You're done, you're closing down for the night. And what it does is it sets up that the perimeter so that only things on the perimeter of the house, the outside walls and things like that, are active, meaning that you can walk around and you can get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom and not worry about tripping a sensor. And then the other one, of course, is the big one, where it's a full lockdown for when the home is completely empty. And also, you know, as we discussed in the last episode, you want to do a walk around perimeter check of your house. These alarms are a great way to check to see if you've left a window open before you go to bed at night. Because if the window's open, there's going to be a bleeping little light at that area that says this window is unsecured. So they're really good. The newest alarm systems are even wired to the internet. This is really cool. So what you can do is you can log into a website over a secured connection and check the status of your home at any time. You can even see if someone's walking around the home by the motion detectors, because they're set to observe and not trigger. So because they're wired to the house, they're always on. They just may not trigger an alarm. So it's great to see if your kids are home from school or, you know, while you're still sitting at your desk at your office. And if the alarm triggers, the system can call your cell phone, send you an email with the details, or both. And some even integrate cameras into the internet feed so you can pull down any of the camera stuff remotely. And so you might see who's the front door walking through your backyard. You can get live camera footage over the internet. The new ones even have battery backups and use cell phones to connect to the monitoring company so that if the power goes out or if their phones are down or they're cut, the system still remains active and it can send alerts out. You know, the technology has really improved recently and the cost of the equipment has really come down. So it's much more affordable for just, you know, the average person. Now, you can go with a full-service company such as ADT, Brinks, or Westech, or something like that. Or, if you're the handy type, you can self-install the systems. There are a lot of them out there, and one of them is like Alarm.com, which is owned by Sears. And everything is wireless and battery-driven. And, you know, they're all really good so long as they're installed properly, and that, you know, offers some level of protection. And something is always better than nothing. The downside to home alarms is that the police no longer respond to them. There have been too many false alarms over the years that have cost police departments way too much money and time, so they don't even respond to them even if the monitoring company makes the call. The only way to get help now is directly from the monitoring company. They'll send someone out, independent upon the company, could be armed or unarmed, or for you to dial 911 from the premises and ask the police specifically and personally for assistance. The alarm systems may also alert you when a door or window is still open, but so far the home alarms won't tell you if they're actually locked. They'll just tell you if they're closed. And another issue is pets. If you have cats or dogs or even birds in the home, they can trigger the motion sensors inside the home. So if you have pets, you can't use the motion sensing monitoring devices. So again, alarm systems are not a perfect defense. There's no such thing. But, as you might remember from the previous episode, they're not always an immediate deterrent either. The guys that broke into the apartment saw the place completely stickered up for the alarms. alerted them, hey, this place is wired, but they didn't believe it, and they went ahead and crowbarred the door anyway. When the alarm triggered, it sent them scrambling empty-handed, but there was still damage to the property. They still kicked off the monitoring plate, the control panel, and they still crowbarred the door, so there was still damage. They just didn't get to actually steal anything, but it cost them money. They also don't protect against the smash-and-grab attacks. And you see surveillance videos of these types of attacks all the time on the news and or on YouTube. You know, criminals will come in and they'll break windows or they'll drive cars through walls, and this will set off all the alarms. But what they do is they run in, they grab what they can, and get out before any sort of response can show up, which usually takes a couple of minutes. You know, this very thing happened to a friend of mine, a neighbor. He had bought a brand new video camera and a tripod, and he spent the evening playing with it, and he left it set up in his living room. And his living room was visible through the window to the street. So somebody walking by decided they wanted it. So they just picked up a brick from his yard, hurled it through the window, setting off the alarm. They just jumped in, grabbed the new camera, grabbed the bag with all the equipment in it, and bailed. And it took probably 10, maybe 15 seconds at most, and the alarm was no protection. You know, the alarm went off, but the guy was there and gone before anybody could respond. So my neighbor was out a few $100s for a new window, a new plate glass window, and then he was out a few $1,000s for a brand new video camera and gear that he got to play with for one night. And you know, and that segues really nicely into my next point. And that is, don't leave valuable items visible from the street. Now, I'm talking about computer systems, stereos, TVs, anything that someone might want to steal and sell for a quick buck. And remember is that windows are not barriers to criminals. They're just an inconvenience. And similarly, if you're a woman, don't advertise that you're a woman, especially if you live alone. And by this, I mean don't put out cutesy items in the yards or on the windowsills, things that, say, a man wouldn't put out. I know the nesting instinct is strong. I've got sisters. I've got a wife. I know what happens. But you need to choose items that make the home look nice without screaming that this is a girly home. And that the key is not to be overt in the decor. And along those lines, do not put your name out in the open. You know, I recommend against placing signs out on your yard or whatever in front of the driveway that say the Johnsons. If you want to put your name on a mailbox, some areas still do that, just use a first initial and a last name. And that's even on apartments, you know, apartment mailboxes where it's a community park box where they're all stacked up together. Don't put your first and last name, just a last name. That's all the mailman needs, a number and a last name. And ladies, the worst thing you can do is put out something that says like Janine's place, because that, again, just says, hey, a woman lives here. The less information you give to the criminals, the better. Don't give them your name. Don't let them know that a woman lives there. Be anonymous, inconspicuous. Now, this no-name policy also applies to the phone. You know, don't have your phone number listed in the phone book. Pay the extra buck or so to have an unlisted phone number. You know, you be in the control of whoever knows where you live and has your numbers. And the problem here is that phone books are no longer restricted to the region or neighborhood or city where you live. That doesn't exist anymore. The phone book information services now make every single phone number in them available nationally. So when you call 411, they ask for what city and state. It's no longer you pick it up and you just say, give me the Johnsons. Because now, well, what Johnson do you want? Do you want them in Omaha? Do you want them in Oregon? Do you want them in Las Vegas or wherever? It's the 411 service is now national. And companies subscribe to all the phone books, and they make these listings available on the internet. So your phone number and your name and your information and your address is now internationally available. Because anyone from anywhere in the world can now look up your phone number and where you live, if that information is there available. And once you're on the internet, there's no going back. I mean, there are still articles that I did back from the mid-90s when I was working in computer virus security. You can still find those articles. They're still out there. And it's, wow, 13 years ago now? It's a long time. But you know what? They're still out there. So don't leave a trail. Don't make it easy for the stalkers. be anonymous, be inconspicuous, be a ghost. Continuing with that, the no-name policy also applies to the answering machine. So don't leave a message with something like, "You've reached Jack and Mary's house." Or worse, you know, "Hi, this is Missy, Bethy, and Amanda, and we aren't in right now." Again, don't advertise that you're a woman. Same applies to children. Do not let your young children record your answer machine messages. It may sound cute to you, but you're empowering criminals with your personal details. You know, don't provide stalkers, criminals, scam artists, kidnappers, pedophiles with information that can be used against you. The last thing you want to do is have some random person call your number and find out you've got children. So, it's not to say that they're not going to be able to find out if they want you specifically. They'll be able to do research and things like that. Just make it hard for them. You know, make it as hard as possible. If it's on your answer machine, you may as well have written it down on a piece of paper and handed it to them. Make them work for it. Be more trouble than you're worth. Be a hard target. Also, if you're a woman living alone, or a single mom, or a group of women sharing an apartment, get your brother, your father, your boyfriend, get any male voice, grandfather, to create the message. Actually, only use your grandfather if he's got a deep, strong voice. Sometimes you can tell when people are getting on, you can actually hear it in their voice. Don't want to sound like an old person, because again, they're considered targets and they're more vulnerable. So get a strong, masculine, young voice. And again, don't leave any information on the machine, right? Don't give out any details. Just the phone number so that they know if they've reached the right place. Now, for example, at my home, the message only says, "You have reached 555-123-4567. Leave a message." It sounds pretty abrupt, and people have said, "Man, you sound way too serious." Yeah, that's part of the plan. Be a hard target, right? So it meets the need without providing any details. Now, they already know the number because they called it, right? It also says, "Leave a message." Basic, right? Now, I could have been taking a nap. I could have been too busy to answer. I could have been in the yard. Could have been not home. But the person on the other end has no idea what I was up to or what I was doing. Maybe I was just screening my call that I don't want to talk to you. You want to keep it that way. And continuing with that thought, for goodness sake, don't ever say that you're gone on vacation or out of town for the holidays. If you do that, you may as well tell them how long you're going to be gone and that, you know, where you'll be staying and that there's a spare key under the front doormat. Of course, that's a, you know, gross exaggeration. But the last thing you want to do is tell any criminal that your home is vacant for any period of time, even 10 minutes, because then they say, "Hey, wait, they're gone, you know, and the house is going to be empty 24/7, and I can sneak in the back, break the back window, come in and take my time and empty the place out." And again, from personal experience, from episode 1, that's what happened to us. The criminals knew we were going to be out of town on holiday for the weekend because they had mugged my father and the receipt was in his wallet. So when we went out of town, they backed up a moving truck, they emptied the entire property, and then they burned it to the ground because they knew we were going to be gone. They knew the place was going to be vacant and a soft target. So give out as little information as possible. Keep as much information as possible to yourself. Don't empower the criminals. So that's all the time we have for this episode, but I will continue the discussion on home security. There's still a lot of stuff to cover, and we'll continue with the next episode. But in summary, we have alarm systems. You know, they are great. They are a wonderful way of protecting the security and the perimeter of your home, but they're not perfect. You know, you want to make sure that the windows are covered. You want to make sure that the doors are covered. And if you don't have any pets, get the motion sensors. You want active monitoring if you can pay for it, because alarms just going off, no one's going to respond. It's like, you know, who looks at car alarms these days? Same sort of thing with a house. So you want a response coming from the monitoring company, because the police don't respond anymore. They don't do that. And you can monitor your stuff, monitor your alarm system, and get alerts over the internet. So they're really good stuff. I highly recommend them. The other thing you want to do is keep things out of sight. Keep as much personal information as possible from reaching anybody just walking by the house. So no cutesy things outside on the lawn. No names on the mailbox, no signs, nothing like that. Keep expensive things, things that somebody might want to steal, like computer systems, stereos, TVs. Keep those out of view from the street. Keep them away from windows. Don't put your computer system up, you know, against the front window in the front room, right, and leave the blinds down all day long when you go to work, because someone's going to put a rock through the window and steal the computer, even if you have an alarm system or not. Snatch and grab. And no names. Keep your name private. Let the mailman know your name, but that's about it. So no names outside, no names on mailboxes, or just a first initial and last name. Nothing on the answering machines, nothing in the phone books. And there you have it. And before we close, I want to bring up that I'm doing a knife survival course. I've got lots of people signing up for this. So we still have some spots available. It's at the end of the month, Sunday, February 24th. And this is a full 8-hour course, and we cover a lot of really great things. So we do directional attacks. We talk about the 21 feet, 7 meter rule, you know, the Tueller drill, legal issues, use a force ladder, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's not a traditional martial arts, come at me like this with an ice pick over the head, you know, slowly. You know, this is fast attacks that teach you how to survive a realistic, full-speed attack from a brutal killer. And, you know, to understand how to defend against a knife, you need to know how to use one. So we spend the morning discussing how to use a knife, and then we spend the entire afternoon learning the defense against those attacks. So the sign-up form is online, and love to see you there. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.